Excellent. Okay, and the weather today for Lincoln, as we heard earlier, highs of 9 degrees centigrade, lows of 5 degrees centigrade, a breezy day with some sunny intervals, or possibly some fog, if you actually go through our American correspondent as well. It's all, yeah, the weather. It's what we like to talk about in this country, Jessica, you know, on a fairly regular basis. I mean, have you noticed that? Did when you were over in Ireland, in Ulster, was it a case of, yeah, let's talk about the weather.
Not as much.
Yeah, it's an English thing, obviously. There's all weather chat and so on. Still, I suppose it saves us from actually talking about serious things.
Yes, yes, that is true.
It's a different way. Simon has returned. Welcome, Simon.
With coffee.
Would you like to share why that Indiana theme was just so important for yourself?
Because I had 8 very happy years in Indiana running the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. Which was a lot of fun. And Indiana is right at the heart of Bible Belt, Cornfield, America. It was great.
You surely must take part in one of our Los Angeles Master Chorale sessions when we actually do sessions with them on a weekly, on
oh,
a,
really?
A monthly basis.
Oh, really? Yeah, wonderful.
Works there. And meanwhile, talking about orchestras and still keeping the theme of Indiana going. Quite right, Lord Victor, it probably was played on a kazoo. Never mind. Film theme from Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. We played the Jonas Brothers earlier. The reason we played the Jonas Brothers was why, Gemma Joy?
It's a guilty pleasure. I was there last night watching the Jonas Brothers, yeah. Not of my own willing volunteer status. Mm-hmm. It was my daughter wanting to go. But they were good. They put on a very good show.
That's okay then. So is this it then, basically, that tragically the voters of Redcar and South Middlesbrough decided not to elect you at the last general election, so as a graduate you thought, I'm just going to take my daughter to the Jonas Brothers concert. That's the key thing.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect response. Purgatory, yeah. More self-denial, more self-sacrifice.
Now, the fact of the matter, Gemma, is you actually graduated from the University of Lincolnshire and Humberside before even Lord Victor became Chancellor of the University of Lincoln.
Wow, that's a long time.
Exactly.
I don't know whether that makes myself sound old.
We're just chronologically gifted. A reminder, in the studio we have Lord Victor Adebowale. We have, obviously, Jessica Burtis from Indiana. No, not from Indiana, from North Carolina. Sorry.
We've been turned too much from Indiana. We're getting very confused.
I'm obsessed with that. Rory McGowan, who you've spoken to, of course, before, and the wonderful Simon Crookall. Simon, of course, your official title is...
Head of Development and Alumni Relations.
So really, Gemma is somebody you should be in touch with regularly. Somebody
of course,
sort of partners,
yes. Gemma, we should talk.
Yeah. We should. I'm always happy to talk. I think that's my problem,
Simon. I've got to ask
Well, we're always here to listen.
I've got to ask you, Gemma, what was it like knocking on the door during the election? Because the Lib Dems had a very clear position on Brexit, which is what the election was about, which was Remain.
Yeah.
And when you knocked on the door in Lincoln, I mean, what was the response? And you can't use any swear words.
No, because there are some swear words that we used as a slogan. And my 7-year-old is delighted with that one. But, yeah, it was divisive. And so where we had support, we had really unwavering support. But it was an election like no other. And where people didn't agree with us, they, in no amount of choice words, told us that. But, you know, that's fine. You know, we took that position. And I think you have to pull up your big girl pants. And you know what? Nobody was horrendously abusive, but actually some candidates got a horrendous deal with, you know, online trolling. That was particularly, you know, death threats. You know, it seems like the country's gone temporarily mad for a little bit, and hopefully we'll settle, because it can't carry on like this. But emotions were really heightened.
Well, do you think it's over? Do you think we've settled down now?
No. No. I think I think some people think that it's settled and it'll all go back to bed. And people were, without being too political, a little bit foiled by that. I just want it done. And when I wake up the next day and it's done, I won't hear about it again. And
yes, you know, sadly, I
believe that in actually for the next 50 years we'll be hearing about it. So yeah, it's done for now, but I think it'll unfold. So the country won't be at rest, you know, and what we have to do is work out what the best way forward is without actually ripping each other to shreds. So,
me and Rory were having this conversation about the nature of democracy, and this is deep, I know it's deep, but we're just going to ask you this.
It's 7 minutes past nine in the morning, we can go deep.
Because we were talking about whether voting is the same as democracy, and I don't think it is.
No, but you raised a really good point about the kind of two bits of democracy that it needs to be effective.
You need to have a credible debate. You need to have an actual debate with information and clarity and leadership and all that sort of stuff. Then you need to vote. If you don't have one, it's very difficult to have the other.
Yeah, I think that was where the rub was, as Shakespeare would say, for this particularly election and the referendum indeed. So I think two things have to be behind that. And I think what we have to do is go right back to basics, sorry to coin another political party phrase. just tripped off the tongue. But we have to go back to basics. And in schools, what we have to teach is not so much political discourse, but critical thinking.
Yes,
so that when we are adults and we're making these decisions, we don't think with a knee-jerk reaction to what a newspaper has said or what we've seen on the television. We think about, you know, what's behind that, whose agenda is it, and all that thing about critical thinking. That's the piece we might be missing, and you know, they do it in the Scandic countries. So,
well, I think it makes universities, the role of universities, quite important in this, because you know, in a sense, that's what they are, critical thinking engines. And we do need to have proper debate. And it's strange because no matter whether you vote Leave or Remain, there's this sense that debate's a waste of time, just get it done. Is actually basically saying, let's not talk about it.
And sadly, on both sides, people weren't listening to each other. So actually, if you could have a reasoned debate where you genuinely listened to the other side, that's all well and good. But we got to the point where that wasn't even happening. But, you know, if we start at the basics and we start before you've even gone down the track of, I need to have a debate because I've got my opinion formed. Well, actually, I haven't... Let's form your opinion first. But we didn't do that.
And it's okay to say I don't know. I think I'm quite pleased with people who just say, you know what, I don't know. I mean, you don't have to have an opinion. You could just say,
Gemma,
I don't know.
We could go on for forever, and we'd love to, but as time is motoring on its own way, I'll just show the team in the studio, Gemma, pictured there with her daughter, in which the line, the estrogen in here is stifling.
Really cool.
So what happens in the whole system. It's been awesome. Rory's going to put those last two questions to you. Go, Rory.
Well, I'm on my way. So, Gemma, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today on the show?
I certainly have.
And will you be returning?
Oh, always.
Well,
try and stop me.
Don't say you walk, I may lose.
So the off-the-shoulder number that we spoke about, obviously Tracy Brabin, of course, MP's off-the-shoulder number, somebody who will provide some more incisive advice and thoughts with respect to that has got to be our ace etiquette expert. She has been absent from the programme for far, far, far too long. It's the awesomely talented friend of Shirley Bassey and Prince Charles and a whole heap of others. It's Liz Brewer. How are you, Liz?
Hello, Alex. I'm very well indeed, thank you.
And I have to say, you do suit the off-the-shoulder number slightly better than Tracy Brabin in that particular team. So juxtapose the image there with Liz Brewer there, Tracy Brabin on that side.
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah? It's a matter of opinion, but I do. I think people should be... I'm pretty relaxed. I think you should be able to wear what you like. Mm-hmm. And I actually thought that the notion in the 21st century that the abuse that Tracy
received,
I thought was really
interesting.
Off,
the voice there, of course, Liz, of Lord Victor Adebowale. Now
odd.
I'm formally introducing you from that point of view.
Hello, Liz. Sorry to interrupt you there.
So your thoughts, Liz, on this particular number? Because I think you've done BBC Essex, a whole range of things with respect to the BBC Hereford and Worcester. Obviously, the Beeb quite anxious about this, really.
Yeah, they've picked up on it, and it wasn't until sort of after about the third interview that Tracy had a chance to actually talk about what she was talking about, speaking about. And that was my point entirely. You have dress codes when necessary and when appropriate, and especially when you're dealing with the public and you're in business and you're setting an example and you're also representing your clients. Now, with Tracy, she's representing us. She's there doing a wonderful job, I'm sure, but, you know, the problem was, and that's what I was trying to explain, bearing slightly more than a shoulder. The focus was on that. Nobody took any interest about what she was talking about. And I'm afraid, in order to explain that, what I'm saying is, fabulous, she looked great, and for maybe a tea party which she'd been to, or for a cocktail party of the evening, absolutely fantastic. And I've got it dressed exactly the same, and I would wear it, but I would not, if I wanted to be taken seriously, and I want people to listen to me and not concentrate on my décolleté and my, you know, what I might be exposing, I would be careful what I wore. I want to be taken seriously. And that was my point. And there is, in the Palace of Westminster, there is a dress code. And the dress code is appropriate business dress. And therefore, you're adhered to that.
Can I beg to differ? I mean, it's not that I disagree with anything. I mean, I think what you're saying is, the trouble is, who sets the standards? So there's been some controversy.
Well, exactly the same.
There's been some controversy about women going to offices and being told they have to wear high heel shoes because the dress code says you have to wear high heel shoes. And I don't think wearing high heel shoes has got anything to do with whether you're taken seriously or not.
I'm not wearing them myself.
I might also add that I'm wearing a three-piece suit and a tie and a shirt. I don't have to. And indeed...
Well, if I can reply to your original statement, you don't think
the head of Apple wore a T-shirt most of the time.
You don't think people should have to wear a dress code. If you agree to work in an office and there is a dress code, that's what you are agreeing to. If you want to dispute that or you don't want to wear a dress code, then don't take the job. And with high heels especially, there are very few now businesses which say we want a heel. Not necessarily a high heel, a heel. And if they're front of office and people wish to say we don't want flip-flops, we don't want bare feet, we'd like a little heel, then that's something you're agreeing to.
And if you agree to that,
then and you take that job, then you adhere to it. But there are many businesses nowadays where women are working and men, and they have to have a certain dress code. They have to cover their hair. They have to have. Really? They have to cover. Have a uniform. There, you agree to that. So in this particular case, you have a very good argument, but what you're doing is generalising, and you cannot generalise when there is a dress code.
Well, that's me told. A business can decide that you could have to come to work in a grass skirt, and if you turn up, that's what you've got to wear.
Precisely, exactly. Brilliant. Especially if you go to there are certain codes within some establishments of entertainment.
But one can go, as I've just demonstrated, from the sublime to the ridiculous, can't you? I mean, there are certain places where you should wear certain things.
Just briefly interject, like, and let's bring in our young people, Liz, if that's okay, without being too patronising about the whole thing. First of all,
Rory's wearing a T-shirt.
Outrageous.
Rory, from your own point of view, your thoughts on this?
So, I am maybe leaning a little bit more towards Lord Victor. I may get a little bit of earache for this, but nevertheless, we're going to proceed. So, I think, yes, there is a sense of if you are signing up to a job and the job has a dress code attached to it, then yes, you respect the dress code. However, I think it is the responsibility of that employer to also make sure that the dress code is fair and keeping up with the times as well. And when we're talking about, like, oh, well, you have to wear high heels. Why? Does it affect my ability to do the job? Does it make me look any more stupid than if I was wearing them?
Let's quickly turn to our representative from North Carolina. I see you've already promoted you to a political sort of status there. Jessica.
I agree that it's really important for an organization to set standards that are fair to everyone. And I understand what Liz was saying, I guess, about wanting, if you want to be taken in a certain light, then you need to dress for the environment. But I guess I just don't, I'm not fond of the certain expectations or you need to dress that certain way.
I mean, it has to be
interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, I'm a 6-foot black guy with dreadlocks and I'm a member of the House of Lords. Now, when people meet me, they may well have an expectation that a member of the House of Lords should, A, be white, not have dreadlocks, and not be 6 foot. But the point is, I think we expect people to not just look at you and make judgments, but to actually try and understand who you are. That's because people's expectations and prejudices get in the way, and I try to discourage that.
Liz, it seems as though, again, as I knew we thought, I was being a little bit mischief-making from that point of view. I think it was nice to actually sort of discuss the sort of perspective that's there in terms of what's appropriate. And as you rightly said, I think it's a fair point, it's what is being said that perhaps is the most important thing, as opposed to interference and confusion that comes with that. Liz, it's been awesome, as ever, connecting with your good self, and it's been far too brief, but have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link today?
It's been very interesting, Alex.
I feel it's actually in the same level as when we actually had you head-to-head with Phil Dearness, and he for some reason thought that just because you actually used to advise Ivana Trump, that obviously you were correct when you said Donald Trump was going to win because he never sets out to do something
well,
that he didn't win.
Some wonderful
precisely. And I can obviously continue to say that.
Exactly.
I continue to say that.
Yeah, precisely.
Finish what I was saying. Yeah.
We will work through that. I think I need to actually dig out some Tallulah Rendell to actually calm the whole process down from that point of view, because Tal, of course, doing some absolutely outstanding work. Recent album, awesome from that point of view. The next critical question, though, Liz, is will you be kind enough to return in the very near future and keep us appraised of life, the universe, and other such matters?
I'd be delighted, Alex.
The important thing. It's all good. We all work together at the end of the day, whatever the state of play.
It's wonderful.
smiles cut through the stairs. And as day breaks, this picture in my mind is left to play as you lay me down. And your arms are all around me, lay me down. As I rest my head, lay me down. In the quiet of this hour, lay me down. As the morning comes, lay me down. Lay me down. Lay me down. And we'll rise, or we'll rise up. Yeah, we'll rise. This hour, lay me down. As the morning comes, lay me down. Lay me down. Lay me down.
A little smidgen of calm there by Tallulah Randall. Bring us nicely round to 9:24, actually just over 9:24. Okay, William Sitwell looks as though he's out of range. The signal isn't working. We're having challenges with respect to our gastronomic expert. Never mind, these things happen, so we may try to actually go maybe a little bit earlier to the official Reginald D. Hunter scenario. The official Reginald D. It sounds like a theme that should actually be there. The Reginald D. Hunter scenario. I might actually use that as an opening question.
Every hour of every day I'm learning more. The more I learn, the less I know about before. The less I know, the more I want to look around. Digging deep for clues on higher ground. The moon and the stars sit well high. The earth and the trees beneath the light. The wind blows fragrant lullaby. The cooler night for you. On the wing, the birds fly free. The violet and Thames and the sea. The flower waits for honeybee. The sunrise waits for life in me. Every hour, every day, I'm learning more. The more I learn, the less I know about people. The less I know, the more I want to look. Intoxicated drinking from the loving cup of burning sun. In dreams I'll crave for bitter taste. Whispered rain on weary face. Kisses sweet and warm embrace. Another time, another day. Every hour, every day I'm learning more. The more I learn, the less I know about people. The less I know, the more I want. I know about people.
sit there by earth and trees beneath the light. The wind blows fragrant lullaby, a golden night for you and I. On the wing the birds fly free, the rising times and we see. A flower waits for honeybee, the sunrise wakes new life in me. Every hour, every day,
learning more.
The more I learn, the less I know. Intoxicated, drinking from a loving cup of burning sun. In dreams I play familiar tales, a whispered rain and weary face, a kiss is sweet and warm embrace. Another time, another place. Every hour, every day,
learning more.
The more I learn, the less I know.
There was a time in the 80s where people realised that UB40 was indeed as an ironic statement on unemployment.
Exactly, it was the signing on form, wasn't it? Absolutely. That's what they called themselves. Yeah.
Bit of historical insight for you there, Rory. Which, had you chosen journalism histories with me this year, you might have actually sort of covered as well. But, you know, there's a module with me the first year and then decides to do something else the second year. Unbelievable.
He's hurt.
Yeah. Exactly.
I couldn't tell.
It's rather like the whole Bedfordshire scenario that it's just unique in its own way. We are endeavouring to get hold of the awesome Reginald D. Hunter. I'll hopefully get that sorted in a matter of moments. Meanwhile, if you have a dog named Bo or Boo...
A woman's mind told me that so.
86% of parents apparently say spelling in the United Kingdom is getting worse. Jessica, spelling. It's getting worse in the United Kingdom. 86% of parents say so.
I mean, you all guys spell colour wrong, and favourite wrong.
Exactly. Tomato, tomato. It's all problematic. Yeah. Yes, apparently 81% of UK adults believe the nation's ability to spell everyday words in the English language is deteriorating, with it rising as high as 86%. Two-thirds blame our inability to spell correctly on our over-reliance on autocorrect, as it introduces plenty of Americanisms, Jessica. As well as the odd faux pas, leaving us oblivious to the many mistakes we make when casually bashing out a quick message. To talk about this in a few moments from now, Andy Salmon, Chief Executive Officer and founder of Thinkalink, also known apparently as Sir Link-a-Lot. Oh, see what he did there. We'll talk about that. And possibly we'll also have a lexicographer and etymologist known to students across the globe, perhaps. Or maybe not. Countdown. Are you a Countdown fan, Rory?
No, I've watched Countdown. You have? I do enjoy it.
Yeah, because I mean, back in my day, it was like Richard and Judy would be like cult.
It was Richard and Judy.
Yeah, I mean, those are things you'd start tuning. But
well, I get a normal sleep schedule and I enjoy Countdown when I watch it. So clearly I'm not the average university student here.
Who are you?
Exactly. And Jessica, don't worry if you're over here, because you may never have encountered this afternoon TV sort of slot, and probably that's why you're a better person as a result, really. That's the key thing. Okay, we still haven't given up hope that Reginald will be with us.
Disappeared.
But, you know, could be the... I mean, another question I was going to put to him, you know, has he been aware of the awesomeness that used to be Reginald Bosanquet in terms of famous Reginalds of our time?
What about Reginald Perrin?
Of course, exactly. Just running off, taking off your clothes, no dress sense at all, running into the ocean and then leaving it there.
That was one of the most rebellious TV series, actually.
Or as we could say, great, super, smashing, great, super, smashing, great.
And we have total blank looks from our young friends.
I know. You should watch Reginald Perrin.
That is what YouTube is for. Look it up. Look it up. It'll make a whole new world even better. These dreams, certainly one of those perfect dreams, is reading the William Sitwell column every Saturday in the Telegraph magazine. Some might say it's the only reason I actually purchased the Telegraph on a Saturday, to actually read Sitwell Stirs It Up. They might well be right. William, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Well, I'm glad. That's wonderful news. Will you tell my employers, please?
Of course. William is pleasantly surprised by some classic pub grub, the latest line in terms of Sitwell Stirs It Up, so great news there. But let's not fuss about this whole side of things. Let's formally introduce you to the team this morning on this special Friday Midweek Drive Morning Edition. We have Lord Victor Adebowale in the studio.
Hello, William. How are you doing?
Good morning.
We also have Rory.
Hello there.
Rory McGowan. And from North Carolina, it's the fantastic Jessica... Burtis.
Good morning.
That's it. We've even got Simon as well from the... He's sort of stepping in for Ellie.
I'm just Simon. Don't worry about me.
Just more than just Simon. It's all great stuff. Very, very keen from that point of view. Lord Victor, any questions for William Sitwell about life, the universe, criticisms, or vice versa?
Well, I have to say, I'm reading your, I'm sort of looking at your article about pub grub, and it is, you've turned a steak and chips into poetry. It's quite remarkable, actually. I've never seen. I mean, how do you do it? The description of Albert's dry-aged steak burger
is phenomenal. I mean,
something else, actually.
Yeah.
You should have seen it.
So you spend your time. We haven't spoken before, but to me, you live the life of Riley. You spend your time basically chilling in restaurants and writing about it. Is that right?
Well, I mean, I am paid to eat out in restaurants and write about it, yes. Amongst other things.
Do you need an apprentice or someone to drive you or just chill with you?
Like everything's relative. It's still, there's still labour involved.
No.
You still have to, you've got to engage the brain. You have to gear up to write the piece. It's every week. You've got to travel around the country to try and give some kind of a spread, not just focus it all in the bustling metropolis.
I know. Have you been
Lincoln.
I was going to ask. Have you come to Lincoln?
I have been to Lincoln, as Alex will know. But he didn't buy me lunch, so I can't tell you about the culinary.
I think we should get you to the university.
We have some wonderful restaurants.
There's some great places to eat here, actually, in town. There's a lovely pie shop, actually.
Right. Oh yes,
on top of the hill. It's lovely.
When you eat out for a living, it's not all glory and pleasure.
No, I know it isn't.
It can be absolute hell.
It can't be.
But also, I wrestle mentally with these things as well, because it doesn't give me pleasure to write a bad review, and I love to give a good review, and I love to see the effect of that.
Yeah.
I have to be careful, because there are up and coming entrepreneurs who are trying things out, and thinking
you can finish them, can't you?
Arguably you can. I think one has to be careful. I mean, as has been reported in the press last year, I gave a bad review to a restaurateur in London, and then he spent 6 months threatening to kill me.
Gosh,
not good, really.
Does put a whole slant on you have an easy life, doesn't it? That's not how it is, is it? No, yeah, I'm feeling you there. So tell me, I'm curious. I've got to ask you. There's been some controversy about the Michelin stars.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly one restaurant that was about to get a Michelin star and then turned it down because they'd rather have a life. It was really interesting. I was wondering what your take is on that.
Yeah, they really can be a blessing in disguise. I mean, the problem that Michelin puts on chefs, or the pressure that chefs put on themselves, is that there's this terrible word called consistency.
Mm.
And, when you're at the top of your game, and you're winning plaudits, you're getting stars, you're getting amazing reviews, there is something incredibly mentally straining about the need to push yourself so that you can be on firing on all cylinders morning, noon and night.
Yeah,
I think that it is very, very draining for chefs, and it's something that people in that industry in terms of mental health are aware of. Marco Pierre-White, who was the youngest British chef to ever get 3 stars, he held his stars for a few years, and then he decided he'd hand them back. I mean, you can't actually do it, but he said, I don't want them. I don't want Michelin coming round. I don't want that pressure.
Yeah.
I'm not always at my stove. I want to go fishing. I want to make TV shows. I want to do books. So he took what he regarded was an honest decision, because, he would ask, is every chef who claims to have stars always behind his stove when you can actually see them on TV? What's the reality there? So quite a lot of chefs around the world have been refusing Michelin. They don't want them in.
They
don't know when they're in, although, to be honest, you can tell when they're in, because you've never,
They're so inflatable, aren't they?
Yeah, Trustpilot's cheaper as well, let's be honest.
Yeah. And it's not just pressure, it's tyre pressure as well, so you've got all sorts of things to go.
Michelin is basically a marketing vehicle for the tyre company. You have to remember that. And
yes, that's right.
They expand around the world as their business expands. Yeah. But for all the criticism that Michelin takes, and they get criticised because they are alleged to represent a particular level of fine dining that isn't the sort of dining that's particularly fashionable today, it is still the pinnacle of achievement when you ask chefs. It still outperforms in terms of glory any other guide, be it the Good Food Guide or Hardin's or the Gat. When you speak to a young chef,
they all want to be in Michelin.
They want to have their own restaurant, they want to have a star.
So tell me, what's in? What's the latest? Food has trends, doesn't it? I was thinking, when's African food going to come into fashion?
Good question.
When is John F. Rice going to be at the pinnacle of...
Well, I hope sooner rather than later. I mean, there's still... I'm wary of trends, but I mean, the things... It's still... Every restaurant that opens is still offering sharing plates, small sharing plates, which I suppose means that you can get to sort of eat more of the menu.
Yeah.
I think if you covered a particular dish, it's quite annoying if you've ordered it and then everyone piles in.
Yes.
The other problem I have, actually, I was in this restaurant in London, and I ordered a vegetable dish, and normally I like a simple vegetable dish on the side. When it's a sharing restaurant, every dish has to become a sort of hero. And so the broccoli dish came with onions and anchovies and chili and oil, and the problem is when you have when every dish has to be a star and not an accompaniment, it ends up being overplayed with.
Yeah.
So you end up actually leaving the restaurant feeling, God, I wish I'd had a little bit of less oil, butter, chili, garlic, anchovy paste. I wanted a bit more simplicity.
I think it's quite hard, isn't it, to make cauliflower taste like steak?
Well, I mean, of course, cauliflower is as fashionable as beer.
That's why I mentioned
London.
It.
And
cauliflower and smashed avocado.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you think that cauliflower is a hero, avocado, you serve it like like a steak, I think it's a bit tragic.
Once again, William, you've got our salivary glands just pumping out, palpitating as the whole thing. I mean, Rory and Jessica just throwing a bit. I mean, you get a chance, obviously, to speak to Rory and Jessica, hopefully, in the very near future. Time is tight. How's the book coming out? Because all these, a matter of weeks, hopefully, before you may be back in Lincoln for, of course, the launch of your latest book.
The book comes out in the UK on April the 16th. Mm-hmm. It's called The Restaurant, It's a History of Eating Out.
Ooh.
And it's a book that every foodie in Lincoln needs and everyone who's ever been interested in history. So there's my market for you.
That is interesting.
Absolutely spot on. The history of eating out. It's very good. So, William, Jessica, last two questions for William, please.
William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Well, I mean, I didn't get to talk to you, so it's been terrible.
Another time.
Yeah.
And will you be joining us again?
I think all four of you should be reunited each Friday morning.
Fantastic.
There we are. The message from William Sitwell, quite clearly.
A smile can bring you near to me. Don't ever let me find you gone, 'cause that would bring a tear to me. This world has lost its glory. Let's start a brand new story now, my love.
Probably still prefer the Bee Gees' original version. Anyway, Boyzone and Words take us neatly through from William Sitwell's Words, and as he clearly has Dame Edith Sitwell in his lineage, what better person to actually go to? But when we talk about words, what about the spelling of those words? What about the whole notion of how American English differs from British English, etc.? Andy Salmon, also known as Sir Linkalot, welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, Alex. How are you doing, all right?
Excellent. Now, in the studio, we have from the House of Lords, and of course, official Chancellor of the University of Lincoln, Lord Victor Adebowale. We also have youngsters in so many ways, 20-year-olds, ancient, really, in so many ways, Rory and Jessica. And I think it's fair to say, Jessica from America. so I think took a little bit of an exception to the line when we said this earlier in the programme about American English autocorrect, etc. Just share with us, how serious is it? I mean, 86% of parents say UK spelling is getting worse. What is the view from your own point of view as the founder and chief executive officer of Thinkalink?
The reason I think, well, there's two or three reasons. I think reading was a big part of people's lives years ago because of entertainment. It was there. We've now got gadgets, unfortunately. So I think people reading for pleasure, that figure's definitely gone down over the last few years, for sure. Autocorrect, of course, is there in predictive text, which is wonderful for people who struggle with the spelling to communicate. It's brilliant, but you get into bad habits, and therefore you avoid the spelling of words. And also, I think because there are no real techniques, up until now, that is, to learn spellings at school, rote learning, people's attention spans, children's attention spans are shorter and shorter, and therefore teachers struggle with rote learning. It doesn't really work, so they spend less time on spelling in schools. And the less time you learn about spelling, there's less chance you're going to learn about it. It's on the wane, unfortunately. But Sir Linkalot is here to save the day.
Well, I'm looking at the website present now, and we see Sir Linkalot, the future of spelling. You've got spelling, vocabulary, homophones, etymology, rules and patterns, etc.
Wow.
Lord Victor, any thoughts on this? I mean, what? Presumably in the House of Lords, the writing is of a reasonable standard.
Oh, it's crisp. Crisp. I mean, Hansard actually record everything that you say, which has been a problem for me, because I sometimes extemporise from my notes a lot, and they come and they send somebody down to collect your notes. And of course, if you're making notes, sometimes I just say things like, "That's rubbish," and I have to cut it out furiously before it appears in Hansard as a comment on the front benches of either party. So one has to be careful. But generally, the standard of writing in the House is pretty good, actually. Certainly Hansard's is very good.
Which is good to hear, I'm sure, Andy. I mean, at least on that level, we've got that right. But our app will help you spell any word. Could it possibly help Rory? Not that you're a bad speller, Rory, but, you know.
Wow. I can't believe you introduced me with that, Alex. No, I'm actually, not only do I have to kind of read around for my degree, so I'm already, you know, trying to keep my spelling to the best that I can, but I also write a diary, and I make it very specific that I spell everything right, because I don't want to look back at it in 40 years and go, wow, could I really not spell like this seven-letter
word? Adebowale, for instance.
That is impressive. You know? Adebowale is a very easy, classic Yorkshire name. It's very easy to spell.
Exactly. Yorkshire is, of course, the Texas of England. Anyway,
have you got...
It is. Wait. Oh, I can't believe I had this realisation.
It is God's own country.
We're going to have to move on.
That's
yes.
True.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that for ages.
Jessica, have you got any questions that you'd like to put to Andy about Sir Linkalot or spelling?
Would this app help me understand British spelling?
Yeah,
more?
There we are. An American asks you the question, Andy, will this app actually help Jessica understand British spelling?
Well, there's only about, I think, Jessica, there's only about 15, 20 words that have got different spelling in America, like centre, colour, manoeuvre, defence. But there aren't many, really. There's about 98% of words, if not higher, are the same. But the problem with English is, as we know, it's, a lot of it is not phonetic. It's ridiculous. Oh, my goodness. Like the sound shun, S-H-N, shun, at the end of a word, can be spelt 13 different ways.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. So station, T-I-O-N, optician, C-I-A-N, fashion, S-H. What chance have you got, really? It's not a phonetic language. And this is where Sir Linkalot has attacked all the tricky words, like the word biscuit, for example. There's a cup in the biscuit. The C is the handle, the U is the cup. There's a physical cup in the biscuit. Or the word special. What is a very difficult word, but the CIA have got special agents. Inside the word special is CIA. So it's things like that. Or the word crumb. You can't hear the B of crumb. Biscuit crumb. The B of biscuit, the B of crumb. So it's attacking these tricky words that, you know, after phonics, there's nothing out there.
I'm down the rabbit hole with you. I think that's amazing. The thing about the English language, of course, is that people always complain about it being changed, but it's been fluid through the ages. I mean, you have to walk through a graveyard to see that. I mean, people have spelt things differently.
It's when the F's were pronounced as S's and vice versa.
And S's, it's fluid, and that's one of its beauties, I think.
But let's not get into changing times and fashions, otherwise Lisboa will be back on the phone again and we don't know what's going to happen in the whole new world. How can people get hold of Sir Linkalot, please, Andy Salmon?
Well, there's the website sirlinkalot.org, where you'll see lots of fun and games on there, some good stats, case studies. But as you mentioned, it's punctuation and grammar, it's rules and patterns, homophones, etymology. Even etymology, Susie Dent from Countdown is on the app because she wants to tell children about words, and it's difficult to get their attention. So It's covering all the technical side of the literacy, and we've also got the app, of course, the Sir Linkalot app, which you can download from anywhere, of course. So it's not just, it's out there to use.
Quite literally, perfect bite-sized boosts for school spelling tests and SATs.
That's a good idea. It's a really good. You do grammar as well.
Yep, like, I mean, and it could of. I mean, really, could of.
Shut up, goodness.
But
Jessica will know that in the States we have spelling bees, which are national competitions for spelling. And maybe we should introduce that in the UK too.
Absolutely, absolutely, definitely. I mean, what's interesting actually with Susie very quickly, when I met her, I thought she'd be really a stickler for words and you mustn't get anything incorrect. She's just like you. Language evolves, it's fluid, and she's very open to that. That surprised me. I got that completely wrong with her, saying this language evolves. Don't get it,
Susie wrong. She's doing the best she can. That's the important thing. She's
fine. Yeah, absolutely. And a great girl. We love her.
She's had to cope with several changes of presenter for Countdown and a whole range of things, and she keeps on going relentlessly. That's the whole thing. One day she might even join us on one of these programs. Anyway, life continues. For the moment, Andy, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Thanks for your time. I appreciate it, everyone.
We will speak again soon, no doubt. Take care.
Bye. Cheerio. Cheers, Alex. Bye.
Missing words, the selector, and those missing words are going to be provided now by Robin Pierce. Robin, it's time for that period of the show where you sum up in about 3 minutes and wrap up the whole sort of sequence and give us your most valuable contributor award. Over to you, Robin.
Not a problem. Okay, so we've done the first half of the show earlier, so there's no point in repeating that. The off-the-shoulder number. This is one of those news stories that kind of I heard and went, What? Really?
Me too.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Isn't what comes
It's Boris's Britain,
lady,
let's face it. Get used to it, but have more of those.
Isn't what
Forget
comes
serious
out of that
news, the journalists aren't allowed
more
in.
More important than whether we can see her shoulder.
I'm with you.
We're not in Victorian times anymore.
Yep.
Let's grow up a little bit, shall we? Sorry, Liz Brew, you are not getting the contribution. When you were talking about Reginald, you missed out on the best Reginald of all. You covered Perrin, you covered Reginald Bosanquet.
Yeah, yeah.
You did not mention the legendary Reginald Mole husband who taught us how to reverse park back in the 70s.
YouTube, Rory. Okay, that's all I have to say. Until the day Reginald Mole husband got it right. That's all I would say.
Sadly, I do remember Reginald Mole husband, which is...
Yeah, maybe that's the reason Reginald D. Hunter couldn't connect. It's just a thought. He's parking his car.
He's still trying to park his car.
Yes,
keep
in
going.
Several stages.
Yeah.
William Sitwell, what he does is really interesting, but it's not really for me, because I'm a simple soul, and fine dining is McDonald's or Wetherspoons, but there are other eateries available.
William may still be listening to the show.
He's fallen off his chair.
Sorry, William. I'll join you for a burger sometime. Andy Salmon, I could not agree more. People don't read enough these days, but if you want me to go absolutely homicidal, send me a message and would of me instead of would have. That'll do it every time. That will unleash my inner Hulk and my inner Mr. Hyde. Okay? Now then, do you want the contributor of the morning?
Well, I think it's fair to say that...
Okay. Are we ready?
Yes.
Head, shoulders, and dreadlocks above everybody else, take a bow, Lord Victor.
Yay! Oh, thank you very much.
You are, sir, immensely entertaining. I've really enjoyed your contribution to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.
There we are, all done and all dusted. And Robin, ready to be back with us again on Wednesday's Midweek Drive?
Absolutely. Excellent. I'll be poised.
Thanks to Phil Learners, Gabriella Peralta, Stephanie Romashevsky, Ben Lewis, Gemma Joy, Liz Brewer, William Sitwell, Andy Salmon, Robin Pierce, and, of course, in the studio, Jessica Burtis, Rory McGowan, Simon and Ellie. Not a team. Both in the same source. And, of course, Lord Victor Adebowale. Fantastic stuff there. Lord Victor, have you enjoyed the programme?
It's been great. Thank you. Yeah. Really, so, I always enjoy it. Thank you very much.
So will you be kind enough to return?
I'd love to. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
A round of applause for Lord Victor, please.
Yay! Round of applause to you guys. Yay!
Actually, Robin, what would you like to say farewell to this time round?
Who would I like to say farewell to?
No. What's our little phrase? We need to keep this stance going. What should we say? Happy Friday?
How about have a... Happy weekend.
Have a happy weekend. Okay, one, two, three.
Have a happy weekend.
Whatever we face, I don't care.